from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting from our studios in New York City. We're carried all over the world. We like to think that this is a reasonable voice for those who are seeking the truth in every area. We always start with health and nutrition, and today I'll also be addressing some of your concern if you are living in the United Kingdom, because they're wanting to ban all homeopathy. In fact, they have banned now, as of this week, homeopathy and herbal medicine. So we'll try to give you an idea of why it's a bad idea. Also, we're going to talk about depression, changing the structure of your brain, according to University of Edinburgh. We'll share the latest on that. And everything about living a longer life, we have that. Lots of material on that. Also, I'm not going to have a guest today because I want to go through some issues that are important. For those who have been listening, I've been talking about the most reasonable evidence to date is that it was not a Russian hacking the DNC computers that caused the problem, the embarrassing emails on John Podesta and Hillary Clinton, but rather it was an individual. Well, now we have a whole group that's coming forward of intelligence experts, and they're saying exactly that. But I'll give you the latest on that to show you that we've been on the right side of that issue, which means that all this is just nonsense about how the Russians adversely affected our election. Also today, meet your new landlord, Wall Street. What does it mean when big investors transform suburban neighborhoods by buying up single-family homes and renting them out? And from our environmental segment, probably the most vulnerable city in the United States to global warming would be Miami and that whole area. You have tens of thousands of homes from Key West right up through the East Coast. They're all vulnerable, but they're particularly vulnerable. And I'm going to give you the latest from the Thomson Reuters Foundation, from Andrietta Brasileiro, on in Miami, battling sea level rise may mean surrendering land. When does it make sense to protect land, and when is it smarter to give it up to the sea? We're going to be seeing this discussion more and more, and it's going to happen shortly. So we have a lot to share. Plus, we have some video clips. Now, for those of you today, you'll hear the video clip, but as of tomorrow or later today, we'll download it on our YouTube as well as Facebook, so you'll be able to watch these as well. And we're going to be sharing, some videos about, does Alexa work the way you think it does? You've all seen the ads about someone saying, Alexa, get me information about such and such, and instantly Alexa has that. It's one of the largest databases in the world. Well, a lot of people are using it now. They're all buying it. It's the hottest new thing. Why is it not the best idea? You'll find out. And we're going to go into all these and more in just a few moments. Let's talk first about health and nutrition. Here's the problem with depression. It really isn't caused by brain chemical imbalance to which a selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting drug like Effexor or Zoloft or Paxil will work. We've been led to believe that that's the best treatment. It is not. In fact, there is new evidence, and I'll quote this from the University of Edinburgh. It says, changes in the brain structure that could be the result of depression have been identified in a major scanning study. Alterations were found in parts of the brain known as the white matter, which contains fiber tracts that enable brain cells to communicate with one another by electrical signals. White matter is a key component of the brain's wiring, and the disruption has been linked to problems with emotional processing and thinking skills. The study involved more than 3,000 people, the largest of its type to date, and it shows that the biology of the brain is unique. Now, what does it mean in lay language? All right, here's what it means. let's say that something's happening in your life that you're not happy with. Well, there are times in life where things are out of our control and we don't feel good about it. So what it means is that we have to understand that when we put ourselves in a place of mourning or depression or anxiety, that's really adversely affecting the brain structure itself. This is part of the movability of the brain. It's very fluid. And everything in the brain is based upon electrical charges. So the memory, your vocabulary, your recognition, your cognition is all carried on electrical currents. And these electrical currents vibrate at a different level. So that means that if you're thinking negative thoughts, you're sending electrical currents throughout the brain with negative thought electrical patterns, and that can change the cell that it communicates with. And that's why when people get into one of those negative grooves, they can stay there for their whole life or long periods of time. All of it's destructive to your brain. You need to be thinking positive thoughts, optimism, challenges, things that excite you, things that you would enjoy doing, things that you have done that you feel good about. That changes the electrical stimulation to parts of the brain, so you're actually creating positive brain. So that means that over a period of time, if you've tended to be positive, you're going to see the world more positively. So even when there are problems, and we're always going to have problems, when there's crisis, and we're always going to have crisis, when there's loss, and there's always going to be loss, you'll be able to handle that loss, handle that crisis, handle that problem better because the brain cells that have been electrically stimulated have a completely different wiring. So that's what it means. Very important. Now, I'm going to jump between two issues right now. This is in the United Kingdom, and I'm going to address all of our listeners. We have a lot of listeners in England, also in Scotland. This is from the Telegraph. United Kingdom's National Health Service to ban homeopathy and herbal medicine, quote, as misuse of resources. They have announced a ban on homeopathy and herbal medicine as they say it is, quote, a misuse of scarce funds. Officials today rule that the treatments are among dozens of medicines which should not be funded by the National Health Service. And then it goes in to say that, quote, it's just a placebo. Really? No, it isn't. They're wrong. And just like people were wrong when the congressman in Florida says there's no evidence on cannabis, let me show you what we came up with. And we look for good quality science, not junk science. And this is the latest. This is on high quality basic sciences and clinical research and homeopathic medicine. That's what you have to look under. So when people want to access good quality peer review science on how homeopathy works, what it does, what it benefits, which it doesn't benefit, there are 200 clinical trials using homeopathic medicine, and you can find it all under, all 200 under evidence-based homeopathic family medicine. And you can go to the website homeopathic.com, which is one of the leading resources for homeopathic science. And here's what we have. We have a lot of scientists in America who don't believe homeopathy could work because when you look at homeopathy under a microscope, you just see water. Fair enough. It's just water. But it's where that water came from. Let's say that you have a burn, and the burn creates red, it creates swelling, and it creates oozing, a sore, a bubble. That's really lymphocytes, your white blood cells. That's the pus in it. Now, what would be one of the possible homeopathic solutions? Well, the homeopathic solution for that would be poison ivy. Why? It's known as the laws of similars. What would cause the symptoms in a healthy person is what's used to treat a person who's got the conditions. So poison ivy causes the exact same symptoms as if you burned yourself, and hence the laws of similars. However, even though you originally made that using poison ivy, you've diluted it tens of thousands of times, so there is nothing there except water. Here's the difference. The energy that was originally there is still present. And energy is where you communicate. Just like I said, if you look in the brain, you're just going to see tissue. Well, how does the brain think? How do you process information? Electrical currents. So the information is carried on the electrical patterns in the brain. The same with any food. The food you eat, if it's a junk food, if it's a dead food, if it's a putrid food, meat's a putrefying food. It's dead. It's morbid. There's no vital life force to it. Now, I know that because I did the original research along with an Italian scientist who came over to, he had a new machine, and we were actually able to measure vital life energy in different foods. It took us about 6 months. We measured over 200 foods, and the ones that had the highest vitalism or the highest life energy were the fresh-made organic juices, fresh fruits and vegetables. But every measure below that, where you process the food, you lost certain points. On a scale of 1 to 10, if you had the fresh wheat berry or the wheat grass, it was a 10. And that's why taking wheatgrass juice is so healing and so powerful. It's not just the chlorophyll. It's the energy. It's vitalism at its best. And the same would be true for a sunflower seed. A sunflower seed would go about an 8, but the sunflower sprout goes a 10. And a fresh apple goes a 10 if it's freshly picked, but most of the time people who eat an apple, it's 7, 8 months, a year later, it's been in storage, so it's a 9. But you make apple juice from that, now it goes down to a 6. And so the more processing you do of something, the less the vital energy, yet it molecularly, it's the same. You look, you say, okay, here was an apple that was fresh. Now, here's apple juice. The whole apple went in there. So if the whole apple went into the juice, then it should be the same thing. And the apple butter, the apple sauce. But it's different. And what's different? The energy's different. So you would think there'd be enough smart people within American science to appreciate that homeopathy works on the entire principle of energy. And because you can't see it, because it's not macular, it's minimal. We're looking for the big molecule. We're looking for something we can manipulate. And it's not there, but the energy is. And that's why it works. And therefore, they have bias on it. So I'm looking right now at page after page of meta-analysis published in peer-reviewed literature. For example, this is in Symptomatic Reviews, volume 142, and an article by about 6 authors here. A randomized placebo-controlled trials of individualized homeopathic treatments, a systematic review, and meta-analysis. It's positive. Well, hello, that's just one study looking at multiple studies, and they found it's positive. Why didn't the scientists at the National Health Service in England know this? And then there's another one here. This is in treating severe to moderate depression in postmenopausal women. This was, quote, a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. It was published in PLOS One, and it showed positive outtake, and it was in 2015. Yet they don't know this exists. And there's another one here. The conclusions on the effectiveness of homeopathic highly depend upon a set of analyzed trials, Journal of Clinical Epidemiology, October 2008, and it goes into the article published in a highly respected journal that evaluates research provides a compelling critique of the Shang Review and shows that positive or negative conclusions are dependent upon the various ways you evaluate the body of evidence, but it came out being positive. And I have randomized, controlled, double-blind, placebo-controlled, and the different journals. This is the British Medical Journal. And they looked at 4 different studies themselves and shows that it was beneficial. 4 studies on homeopathic treatment for people with respiratory allergies. They were positive. So I'm here with hundreds of studies from peer-reviewed journals. The Pediatric Infectious Disease Journal is another one, double-blind placebo-controlled studies. So these are double-blind placebo controls, and there's one here conducted at the University of Vienna Hospital, and it also shows positive outcome. This is from Kambut National University School of Medicine in South Korea, respected school. Quote, EGCG, that's green tea, inhibits the growth of breast cancer cells. Findings, quote, findings on breast cancer reported by researchers at the National University School of Medicine showed that the gallate, which inhibits the growth of MDA-MB231 breast cancer cells via inactivation of the B-catenin signaling pathway. And so, quite simply, you have a substance that can help prevent breast cancer. You're a doctor. You're an oncologist. You're seeing women with breast cancer. Do you ever mention this? Are you aware of it? Do you know that there's over 200 studies on curcumin and green tea helping women with different cancers? But there's not going to be any money put in your pocket or to your research facility or to your teaching hospital or your department. These are just natural, non-patented substances. Just want to show you once again, something passes, it becomes law, and then now the people in Great Britain and Scotland won't be able to get any of these to help them with any condition. But drugs, open the door on that. All the drugs you can possibly put in your body, they want to put in your body. And whether it's socialized or privatized is irrelevant. Remember, the whole argument is a dunderheaded argument by a bunch of morons from left and right. I'm embarrassed by how stupid the intellectual left has been and the non-intellectual right. That's an oxymoron. Why? Because no one seems to be talking about the most important thing. Does any of our medicine work to begin with? Whether you have to pay for it, co-pay for it, go broke, go bankrupt paying for it. What if I told you, okay, what's it matter if it's for free or you pay for it if at the end you die or it doesn't work? Does that matter at all to you? If you're the average person, the answer is no. And that's unfortunate that we've denigrated to the level where we can't even know what the proper questions are to ask, what the argument should be, and the context in which we should be having this discussion. Number one, if medicine hasn't been proven to work by independent science, it shouldn't be used. It is quackery. Two, if you use a medicine or a drug knowing that it's not been held to any high standard and has the potential to hurt people, you should go to jail for life. I mean, everyone who works in that company who is responsible, all the lawyers, the board of directors, all the scientists, all of the advertising, everybody should be held accountable. How long do you think it would be before we started getting effective medicine, no longer dangerous medicine that kills people? Because we actually have medicine that kills people. Every year, more people, more Americans will die from medicine than heart disease or stroke or cancer or diabetes. And yet not a single discussion anywhere. Now, I don't expect the morons at MSNBC or the fascists at Fox's or the brain-dead people at NPR. I don't expect any of these people to speak for you because they have no knowledge, no experience, and no common sense, no reason. They're all agenda and ideologically bound. But I expect you to start doing your homework before you become a victim of your own hubris, indifference, and stupidity. Sound tough? Not as tough as death. Because you choose not to trust your own capacity to look for the truth, and sooner or later you're going to be risking all of your virtue of trust upon someone who may only have making money off you as their only agenda. In which case, then, 60,000 Americans died from taking one drug during 4 years. Not a single person was held accountable. No one. The only person who was punished was Dr. David Graham at the FDA, who tried to expose this corruption, and he was harassed and ridiculed and threatened. That's the game you're playing in. You think you can win that? I don't think so. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Hard-hitting, yes. Do we need to hear this? You bet we need to. And if we can't handle that kind of truth, then you shouldn't be listening to my radio program, because I'm not going to sugarcoat anything to make people feel good about themselves. That's not my responsibility. That's yours. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Things I want, a lot of things that I'd like to be. But girl, I don't foresee the rags to be. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Just remember, every day when I get up, I know I have to go to battle. Go to battle with the forces that would manipulate, lie, connive, deceive, cheat. Everything they can do to gain confidence over a public that is not willing to do its own homework, to know what's in its best interest. The people that eat the food, the fast foods, 90% of all Americans, the people that are not exercising, people who are not cleaning up their environment, the people who are buying clothes where slave labor was involved in creating it, the people that are not going to buy organic but will buy GMO food and mock organic. Everybody has their reckoning. Everybody meets their karma sooner or later in their life. We escape nothing. It's just delayed. Now, before we go forward, I have a lot to share. I'm going to be sharing the latest. In fact, I'm going to do this right now because I think this is very important. I've been telling you that there's a lot of problems with Trump. And there's a lot of problems with every single appointment he has and all of his family members that are in government and both parties. It's just one giant cesspool. So to suggest that, you know, you can reach into a toilet and find the pearl and pull it out, it isn't going to happen. But what is happening is that instead of focusing our energies, both houses, both Democrats and Republicans, on what we can do to help working class Americans regain a real health single care paying system that works, that actually prevents disease, that's not being discussed. How we can protect ourselves from global warming by helping people resettle, opening up ways that we can help subsidize those who are near the ocean to move back and do it now, we're not doing. Helping to de-ghettoize America by reinstituting loans to communities. Now, remember, the government's never going to pay any of its debts back. It doesn't have to. So it's not going to. So I don't care if there was $1,000 trillion debt that the federal government has. It's meaningless. It's absolutely irrelevant how much the government owes because it never has to pay back a penny. It's only its entitlements it has to pay, and it can print money to do that. And no one's going to say a thing about it around the world because we're held to a different standard than anyone else that has to balance their budget. So why not then give loans out at zero interest to anyone who qualifies of up to $5 million in a community where first you have local working groups of people who own businesses who then can advise the likelihood of a success or failure of a given business. Now, if you talk with small business people, they're very keen on what works and doesn't work. And a lot of times people are underfunded. So what if the terms were you can pay your loan back at the end of 3 years, starting to pay it back with no interest, but for every million we give you, you have to hire two employees at living wage, not a minimum wage, living wage, and health benefits. We could employ about 15 million people and rejuvenate all of the inner cities within 3 to 5 years if we did that, just that alone. And we should also have zones in America where people can work on products and services that are now relegated to third world countries that are exploiting their labor force, and hence we can't compete. If you're a union worker here and you're making $40 an hour and you're competing to make the same dress as a woman making 14 cents an hour, and if people want to buy the cheapest dress, then you have to do a whole new education program on America, and you have to be able to help those manufacturers sell those products at competitive prices. And we have not been willing to do that. And we should. We've done nothing to help the average worker. But we have subsidized the very people we shouldn't. We have subsidized the banks. We have subsidized Wall Street. We have subsidized big oil. We've subsidized gas hydrofracking. We've subsidized nuclear. Those we've subsidized. Hundreds of billions of dollars a year. But not a penny to the workers. So we've just misplaced the money that we have spent. We could realign that. Anyhow, so that's just an idea I'm going to continue to harp on, in that we could get Americans working again. But we're told that, oh, the Russians ruined our election. No, they didn't. There's no proof of that. Forget all the meetings they had. That's normal. Everyone has those stupid meetings. But the hacking is where they've hung all their energy. Here's the latest, and this is from Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. And that's a really powerful group of people. And these are some of the top whistleblowers in the intelligence community in American history, including Skip Folden. And he was a retired IBM program manager and head of their information technology division. Matthew Ho, former in Iraq and foreign service officer in Afghanistan. And it goes on a whole long list of these people. These are the ones, so at least you know, Ray McGovern, these are the people who are part of this. Here's what they say. This is their executive summary. Quote, forensic studies of Russian hacking into Democratic National Committee computers last year revealed that on July 5th, 2017, data was leaked, not hacked, by a person with physical access to the DNC computers and then doctored to incriminate Russia. After examining metadata from the Guccifer 2.0, July 5th, 2016 intrusion into the DNC server, independent cyber investigators have concluded that an insider copied DNC data onto an external storage device and that telltale signs implicating Russia were then inserted. Key among the findings of the independent forensic investigation is the conclusion that the DNC data was copied onto a storage device at a speed that far exceeds in an internet capability for a remote hack. Of equal importance, the forensics show that the copying and doctoring were performed on the East Coast of the United States. Thus far, mainstream media have ignored the findings of these independent studies. Independent analysis, analyst Skip Folden, a retired IBM program manager for information technology, who examined the recent forensic findings, is a co-author of the memorandum. He has drafted a more detailed technical report entitled Cyber Forensic Investigation of Russian Hack and Missing Intelligence Community Disclaimers and sent it to the Office of the Special Counsel and the Attorney General. And William Biney, a former technical director of the National Security Agency, and others. And the recent forensic studies fill in a critical gap. Why the FBI neglected to perform any independent forensics on the original Guccifer 2.0 material remains a mystery, as does the lack of any sign that the hand-picked analysts from the FBI, CIA, and NSA who wrote the intelligence community assessment dated January 6, 2017 gave any attention to forensics. So, here's the latest information that is not being discussed in any of the media that shows that the Russians did not hack anything. It was someone inside there who copied it, and then they tried to make it look like it were the Russians. Then this was handed over by hand in a park right beside George Washington University, the thumb-dried and actual files. So now you're up to date, something the mainstream media is not up on. And also, want to mention about Miami. This is the latest on the environment. And this is from Thomson Reuters. It says, in low-lying Miami, flooding from rising sea level is as much a part of everyday life as mosquitoes and cumin coffee. Pretty much any longtime resident has a story to share about floods they've encountered during hurricane season, heavy summer storms, or when strong king tides send growing volumes of water surging across parts of the city. Miami Beach, the city that stands to lose the most from sea level, is spending $100 million to raise more than 100 miles of roads, install dozens of pumps, and build higher seawalls and revamp drainage systems in a fight to keep ultra-valuable real estate dry. The mayor, who was elected on his promise to protect Miami Beach from rising waters, says the city will invest even more, if necessary, in adaptation strategies to protect more of the $40 billion worth of property. But on the other side of Biscayne Bay in Miami's Shorecrest neighborhood, a novel idea is taking shape. Instead of trying to keep the water out of the notoriously flood-prone area, officials are considering surrendering some of the developed land to nature to accommodate inevitable rising seas. The idea is controversial and expensive, as it involves demolishing properties and moving people and businesses away. But officials say it's a long-term solution, unlike Miami Beach's temporary remedies. Climate change is the biggest challenge for Miami, and we need to think outside the box to come up with innovative solutions. All right, so here's the idea. Temporary moving isn't going to be any good, because no matter how many times they move and where they move, they're going to have to move again. And $500 million to help the water that's coming in now, just at night, not with floods, not with hurricanes, just every night the tides come in. I lived there for 15 years. I was a resident until recently right on the ocean at Ocean Drive and 2nd Street, and I saw it. There's no way you're going to be able to protect Miami Beach from the ocean. It's impossible. You would spend tens of billions of dollars, and the first time that there is a Category 3 to 5 storm, it's all destroyed. So what you should do is just first stop developers from lying to people and telling them it's a great place to invest. It isn't. Secondly, sell what you have. I would. I did. Third, just dismiss all this as irrelevant and enjoy it as long as you can until your property is taken back by the ocean. And we're not talking about buildings being covered by water. We're talking about the water coming up so far that when it goes down and completely disrupts the normal foundational support that a building rests upon. Concrete pylons that go down and rest upon sand. All that's going to be destabilized. And then the storms are coming. So something to think about. It's the last place in the world I'd invest. I wouldn't invest or buy anything in Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, Colorado, Kansas, Indiana, Georgia, 80% of Texas, 70% of California, because these places are environmentally inhospitable and are going to get drier, hotter, and nothing's going to stop it at this point. There are too many things that have tipped. Just a heads up. Now, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go into some other issues, but I want you to hear something. What you're going to hear during this break is a very young girl. I'm guessing she's about 9 years old. So the voice you're hearing is a 9-year-old. Please remember that. We'll be back in a moment.
From Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is Jackie Evancho.
Song.
What a voice. Always nice to see someone that young, that gifted, that unique, that talented.
It was 4 years ago that I produced a film called Seeds of Death. And no program like this has ever been on PBS before, but this got on their Colorado station, and it not only was well received, they even tried to modify the to keep it low key. So they put it on late at night when most people were no longer watching public television after 11 o'clock, and it was still very popular. To date, it's ran over 85 times. Why? Because people are interested in knowing more about whether food is genetically engineered, and if so, what's wrong with genetic engineering? Well, there are dozens of studies now showing their harm to animals, to the environment, and to humans who consume genetically modified foods. And a lot of our corn, our soybeans, have been impacted by genetic modification. So that's in that context that the British nonprofit GMO Watch recently revealed the agribusiness takeover of Conabia, the National Advisory Committee on Agriculture Biotechnology of Argentina. Now, Conabia is the GMO assessment body of Argentina. It's official, meaning it's the highest body in the land that tells you whether or not GMOs are safe or not. According to GM Watch, 26 of its 34 members were either agribusiness company employees or had major conflicts of interest. And packing a regulatory agency with conflicted individuals is one way to ensure speedy GMO approvals, and Conabia has certainly delivered that. Now, a much more subtle but ultimately more powerful way is to bake approval into the structure of the GMO assessment process itself. And that's what they did. So, in effect, in Argentina and other countries, the pro-GMO people, like Monsanto, they have enormous influence. And if you influence these committees, then the so-called independent scholars on there are not independent. They're really just hacks for the GMO. So it happened here in the USDA, the FDA, the CDC. It's happening there. From our environmental segment, according to the latest on Antarctica, the Larsen C ice shelf, the one that is broken off and is no longer attached to Antarctica, it's getting worse. There's a new rift detected, meaning the part that was still left intact, which is most of it, it's still going. Quote, where a trillion-ton iceberg calved last week, researchers have detected a new rift. The concern is that the Larsen C shelf will destabilize and collapse, releasing glacial ice into the sea. So here's in lay language. We know that the Larsen C shelf, the size of Delaware, the largest iceberg ever broken off, is only a small part of the larger Larsen C ice shelf. And just 1 week after the largest iceberg ever recorded broke off, there's now a new split in the existing one. And it's running in a direction that it's already up to 6 kilometers, which is 3.7 miles, heading north from the complex region of the cracks that formed before the iceberg broke away. Here's the problem. If that continues, there's no telling how far it will go and how large the next iceberg split off will be. But mind you, we were assured that the Larsen B shelf that preceded the break off the Larsen C was stable for at least the next 100 to 200 years. After all these assurances that it wouldn't break off in our lifetime, it broke off 2 weeks later. Now we were told the Larsen C would not break off. It broke off. Now, Larsen C is continuing. So when I say that we're in chaos theory, there is no way that we can accurately and mathematically predict how quickly the sea will rise. This is one of the stumbling factors. Now, I'm off to Iceland and Greenland shortly to film. Why? Because aside from the thousands upon thousands of mini lakes that are forming all over Iceland, or excuse me, Greenland. Some are maybe 4 feet deep, 10 foot deep, the size of a small palm, but others are much larger. All over there are these giant cracks where the water pours down. Now, how bad is it? Well, imagine a mini Niagara Falls, where water by the billions of gallons are going straight down from the warm and melting surface of Greenland to the bottom. What happens when that water hits the bottom? Simple. It creates a skid, much as if someone picked up ice, Greenland and sprayed DW-40 all over the bottom. Except now we have water down there, and it's creating that same skid. Now, since Greenland is at a substantial elevation, it means that once something is pulling it gravitationally to the ocean, it's going to get there a lot quicker. So we have an awful lot of water on Greenland that is melting, going to the bottom, and in some place that's 2 miles down. And so don't be surprised if in the next 3 years we hear about a giant calving, either in Greenland, which also has a crack now, just like the Larsen Sea Shelf did. We were the first to report upon the Larsen Sea Shelf. So I'm going to go to Greenland, see how bad that crack is. In the middle of the country, which is huge, you could put Texas in Greenland and have a lot more room for other states, including Alaska. So we're talking about something huge, but we have no way of knowing how serious this is. But it doesn't look good. So that's just the latest on that. Also, I want to call out the World Bank. Why? According to Countercurrents, the World Bank is really hypocritical because on the one hand, they warn us about global warming, good, and then they turn around and finance a coal plant. Quote, the World Bank warned about global warming only days ago. The bank said 4 degrees Celsius of global warming simply must not be allowed to occur. But in a recent report, said the bank is considering financing a new coal-fired power plant in Mongolia. So, yeah, they're aware of how bad it is, and then they contribute to it. Just utter hypocrisy. This is from Common Dreams. Scary CO2 rates climb even as emissions stabilize. Scientists say the Earth's natural sponges may be unable to absorb CO2 at the usual rate. Quote, climate scientists are sounding the alarm about a new realization. While carbon dioxide emission rates by humans have stabilized, that's good, the level of the greenhouse gas in the Earth's atmosphere has continued to rise in 2017. Well, that's not good. And since scientists began studying climate change, they've determined that most carbon dioxide that is produced when humans burn coal or oil or natural gas is absorbed by the Earth's oceans and land. The rest has caused concern because it's released into the air, warming the planet. And countries around the world have enacted regulations to keep carbon emissions to a minimum. Well, so here's the deal. Here's what we're not being told or have not been told. Even if we stop all global warming today, and that's not going to happen, we've already released so much into the atmosphere that the global warming is going to accelerate and pass that 2 degrees. And when that happens, kiss goodbye to half of the population on the planet being able to live in their existing positions. They'll become environmental migrants. We will destroy the last species of animals that, except for tiny little animals, the larger animals, they will not survive that heat. And say goodbye to feeding half the world, 3.5 billion people. If you can't feed them, where's the money going? Where's the food going to come from? Where's the water going to come from? So that's what it means. Now, so is there anything here we can learn from? Yes. Go to a plant-based diet immediately. Tell your legislators, don't allow any drilling, clear-cutting, or any denaturing of our national parks and forests. And then do what India did. Just 2 weeks ago, they planted 66 million trees in one day. We could do the same. If we started planting trees in every state, hundreds of millions per state. We could plant several billion trees. And now they can actually plant them with these drones. The drones shoot hundreds upon hundreds of seedlings into the soil and allows the trees to grow. We also started to convert a lot of our farmland in America, especially during this time, into hemp. It grows much faster than a normal forest, much, much faster, like five times faster. And that would act as a carbon sink and absorb the CO2, hence helping to slow down global warming and cooling the planet, also stabilizing the soil, helping prevent dust storms, sandstorms, and desertification. And stop buying so much stuff. If we don't need it, please don't buy it. That also helps prevent obsolescence and slows down the whole idea that the only value we have is in what we own or what we possess or what we buy. So those are some good ideas coming on the back of some serious problems.
Now, to make your stay very special, it's not a yoga retreat. It's not a. I want to share a couple more things here I think are important. This is from the Free Thought Project from Judith, and she says the following: American media silent after the UN just called for decriminalizing drug use worldwide. Quote, a little notice public statement issued by the United Nations last week contains a dramatic shift in thinking on the issue of illicit substance use. After multiple meetings, they looked at the failed idea of prohibition, and the UN is now calling for the worldwide decriminalization of drug use and possession. The statement put out by the World Health Organization, as the U.S. is in the midst of another political debate over health care, calls for, quote, ending discrimination in health care settings. The World Health Organization calls on states to end discrimination against, quote, marginalized and stigmatized populations in a variety of ways, and includes a blunt and rather shocking statement on the drug war. Quote, we, the signatory United Nations entities, call upon all stakeholders to join us in committing to taking targeted, coordinated, time-bound, multi-sectional action and supporting the decriminalization. Now, why is this important? Why do I believe that we should approve this? Because look at what prohibition did in the early part of the 20th century. It created Al Capone, organized crime, La Cosa Nostra. Look at the Costello, the great gangster, and Bugsy Siegel. And all those crime families, of which there were seven primary ones, the Colombo family, the Lucci family, the Genovese family, they profited because people wanted to drink alcohol and weren't given the opportunity to. So the government banned it, and that caused organized crime, all those killings, the infiltration of those organized crimes into legitimate businesses, loan sharking, prostitution. It all happened. We shouldn't have had prohibition. There was a time when hemp was completely legal to be grown anywhere. In fact, if we grew hemp trees from hemp, it would grow much, much faster than a regular tree and would help with deforestation. It would also help global warming. And hemp oil is very powerful. And yet we, for political and economic reasons, we ban it. And then we criminalize this possession. Just imagine this. Imagine you're in New York City and you're African American or Latino and you're walking down the street and the police pull up and they stop you. And they did this to over 600,000 New Yorkers just one recent year. And they want to look in your pockets. They say, show us your pockets, what's in your pockets. So it's not illegal to possess a small amount of marijuana in New York, but it is illegal the moment it is shown in public. So when you take it out of your pocket and you have it in the palm of your hand, then they arrest you. And now you go to jail for 7 years. What happens to your family, your children? What happens to you? You're not going to be able to get public housing. You're not going to be able to do a lot of things once you have that record. And people won't necessarily look to see, oh, you just had a little bit of marijuana. they're going to think that somehow you're in the prison system, you're a criminal, and therefore you deserve no break. What's going to happen to you in jail? High percentage of young people are raped. They're brutalized. They're forced into gangs. The worse food, the worse conditions, fear, stress, trauma, post-traumatic trauma when they get out. And yet we think that's normal. It is not. We have more incarceration than any other country in the world, more than China, and more than Russia. And think of all the beheadings and killings in Mexico by the Sinaloa group. There are over six major drug gangs in Mexico. More than 120,000 citizens of Mexico have either been murdered or disappeared and assumed murdered. And they're thriving. And it doesn't matter if you take out El Chapo or one of the heads of the gangs, there's immediately 100 people to take their place. So the idea of killing them, arresting them, doesn't change anything. And think of the fortunes they've made and then what they do to adversely affect society. We should acknowledge that the reason, that, first, why do we have people wanting the drugs? Secondly, what does it mean when we criminalize this possession or use or distribution? And what would happen if we simply legalize it like Portugal and other countries and look at it as a person needing help? And they do. So let's not criminalize drug use. Let's help the people get off the drugs. There are natural holistic approaches. I know because I was the head of drug control at an interdiction at Trafalgar Hospital for a long time. I helped thousands of people using holistic protocols, not methadone. And get them back into society and expunge their records and get them out of prison en masse. Pardoning 100 people when you've got another 1.5 million in there doesn't do any good. It's just a token effort. So we've got to really clean out the prison system, close down the private prison system, end the war on drugs, rehabilitate and help people back into society, and then ask the big questions. Why are we an addictive society? We don't consider alcohol addictive, yet it is more of a problem as is smoking. We don't ban smoking, but look at all the people who die from alcohol and smoking. How many people die from marijuana? It's just stupid. So let's stop destroying society and destroying lives, all for political and economic reasons. And then let's rebuild society by dealing with the real issues that drive people to addictive behavior to begin with. It's just my suggestion. We're at the end of our program. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a nice day, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now, stay tuned for Yutrice Leach. She's got her full 55 minutes coming right at you right now.
First the tide rushes in.